Good evening, everyone. I want to really thank both Mr. Harari and Rabbi Neuberger for taking out time from their very, very busy schedules, packed schedules, to share with us their thoughts, their insights into how we can best manage when we move past yeshiva, this next stage of life into the workplace. Just by way of introduction, in addition to the thank yous, I'll just open with a story, which really kind of encouraged me to try to put something like this together. I was speaking to a friend of mine who was a YU graduate. After YU, he learned for a couple of years outside of YU and then went to law school and entered a law firm. And he entered at the same time with people that he knew from his past who had similar backgrounds, similar upbringings, similar commitment to a Torah lifestyle. And he was sharing with me his observation. His observation was as follows. He said when he started and situations would arise and things would come up and challenging questions he would have, he always ran by a rabbi that he trusted who would give him psak of how he should conduct himself. And he felt no matter what he did, nothing was ever a compromise because everything was always done for him, at least hapidas Torah. This is what he should be doing, so he's straight on a path. And he noticed other people that were very similar to him in every other way, in the background, the commitment, and everything, he saw them taking a very different direction of life. And his observation was, he says, they didn't really ask questions. They didn't really arm themselves with knowledge of how to best approach something. And he felt that even if at the end of the day, they both did the same thing, but he did something up here wrong, and they just kind of did it on the fly, so they felt themselves that they were cutting corners, that they were compromising, and they started redefining slowly, slowly who they were and what their character was, and their lives really took a different course. So this take-home message, at least to me, was number one, that it's best not to do things on the fly, but to the extent that we can prepare ourselves and think about things in advance and be aware of things before they arise, so that will help us in better dealing with it. And number two, and hopefully we can hear more about this from our both speakers, is that to the extent that we can in advance create protective factors or safety factors that help us maintain the kind of ethics and morals and standards and commitments that we have for ourselves going in, we can build those protective factors into our lives, then hopefully, Mirat Hashem, we'll be very successful in the next stage of life. So without further ado, I'd really like to call upon Mr. Harari to open us up with some thoughts, and Rabbi Neuberger will then continue. And we have here cards, so if you feel more comfortable writing something down and passing it up, that's great. Otherwise, if you want to raise your hand to jump in there, that is oh so good. We'll be taking questions, and really it's meant to be interactive. So thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. I appreciate it. I'll open up with a few ideas, leave the halachic concepts to Rabbi Neuberger, and just talk a little bit about that I think are observations in the workplace in terms of being from. Thank God I've had a bunch of years out of the workforce, worked in different companies with different groups. Some experiences were easier than others. My first job was in a company called Davis Polk & Wardwell. And my first day, my Italian supervisor came up to me. There's a woman named Lydia Kess. I don't know if you guys know, big lawyer. She's one of the most popular first ever Wall Street lawyers. First ever Wall Street woman lawyer, and she's from. He walks up to me the first day and goes, hi, you're new here? I go, yeah. He goes, I'll be your supervising attorney. I go, nice to meet you. He goes, listen, I don't know what happened to you guys, you know, on Friday afternoon. Apparently you turned to pumpkins, you know, when the clock strikes, you know, dark. Whatever happens is cool. Whatever you got to do to get where you got to go so you're not a pumpkin in the office, it's cool with me. If it works for Lydia, it works for us. And so I was like, well, that's awesome. It was always the winter time, you know what I'm saying? The winter was always there. I was doing it like 11 now. There are some jobs like that, and there are some jobs where as I was leaving, they're like, what's going on over here? Like, don't you realize we've got to do? We get it. We get it. We know, but this is, you know, you can still answer BlackBerry. It's not like we're not asking you to, like, you know, eat pork. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's an email. But this is like the beginning of half Shabbos. This is where I get it from. And so, in this various world where Hashem has placed me in different environments, different circumstances, there's a few things that I just want to share with you as just concepts to bring them out. And I hope, to me, at least from my perspective, and I know that the idea of this forum is to get your thoughts and to use your questions and thoughts as a forum for discussion. I find that the path that one takes has a few different perspectives. The first perspective is every Jew needs to walk around with pride. The minute you go out into the world, you have this sense, if you're identifiably from Jew, that means you walk around with a yarmulke, or even if you don't walk around with a yarmulke, you, in the first dinner, they know. They always know. The book out on Friday, they know. At some point, everybody knows you're the Orthodox Jew. When that happens, there's like this transition that goes on in your mind from I'm like everybody else to I'm a little different. And when you're in an environment, like a corporate environment, where like it's all about being like everybody else, it's all about getting there and making it and winning and trying to, not because you're overly competitive, but because you're trying to survive in a competitive world, there's a sense that you have early on, usually in the first second when they size you up, and if not 5 seconds later, you're different. And now people go one of two ways. As soon as that happens, you go either underground and try to figure out how you can be just like everybody else, or you walk, not with a sense of arrogance, with a sense of pride. I'm different. I'm still going to dominate my job. I happen to be different. There's a set of values. There's a faith that I ascribe to, and guess what? I am proud of. Now, even if you don't say those words, the feeling you have of pride, the way you conduct yourself, does something amazing to the environment. And this is something that it took me 10 years to cop. Everybody, there's a famous, I forgot his name, who's the pitcher from the Tigers that didn't play on Chavez? Greenberg? Not Koufax, he was from the Dodgers. He wasn't a pitcher, he was a first baseman. Hank Greenberg? When Hank Greenberg didn't play, it was in the World Series on Chavez, the Detroit press killed him. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not talking about like 2010 on Wall Street. We're talking about, I think it was in the 30s or the 40s in Detroit. And they killed him. And there was one poem that came out in the paper the next day that said, Sandy Koufax is a true American. Because what it means to be American is that you hold on to your values. There's a pride, there's a sense that we have in our country amongst everybody. Sometimes it gets lowered as the world continues to disintegrate morally, and as what becomes normal practice is actually in a world of disgust. Even so, even in the depths of despair, of moral despair, in which unfortunately sometimes, and depending on your profession, you may enter or have to go to, every person that you can come close to has this inner sense of I respect people that respect values. There's a depth that humans have. All humans have it. And when there's someone that stands for something that's greater than a couple of bucks and is willing to go through the extra pain to make up whatever, not to take an easy way out. We're not looking for a shortcut. We're looking to work harder, but we're looking to do it within the context of my values. Everyone around you senses that that's something that I need to respect. In my previous job, I worked for a company called RXR. And this is a true story. And just tell me when I should stop, by the way. I don't want to... The hook. Remember the gong show? The hook. There was... one of my lawyers said to me, the general counsel said to me, yeah, when I hire lawyers, I only go for Orthodox Jews. I'm like, what? That's like, you know, reverse discrimination our way. I'm all for it. I'm like, why? He's like, every time I meet you people, such a hop. He's so brilliant, this guy. He goes, you have this way of understanding law and knowing how to navigate your life through the law. You hear the chop? What do we do for a living? We don't give up on law. We keep the rules, and we chop. We understand how to navigate life within the context of not giving up. By the way, that is law in its entirety. And I never understood that a man who works 24 hours a day, the deals that we do in this company do not stop on Friday night. But he understands and respects that if someone has something deeper, there's a value there. And when he makes up his work on Saturday night, ultimately, I'll keep him in the long term, it always works. And so I found myself, and there are plenty of people that I've seen along the way, that drop out. Whether they keep, they make compromises they should not be making, and they don't need to be making. they do things and say things and go to places that they don't need to go to. What happens along the way is that they lose that respect. And once you lose that respect, you're out. That work is more important than your faith, and now you're one of us. Now let's work all day. Where are you? And there's always a person that comes through with that pride that says, this is who I am, and I'm proud of who I am, and guess what? I'm going to do whatever it takes. And guess what? And this happened to a close friend of mine. If you have to fire me because of Shabbos, I'll walk. You can't believe what that does to people. Number one, pride. Number two, openness. When you're from sometimes, you live in a bubble. When you go from yeshiva to Israel to yeshiva, you live in a bubble. You never really interacted necessarily with someone who has no idea what is going on in your world. Someone who will read something in the papers and say, you guys do this? There's a new book out there called Unorthodox. Is that what goes on in your place? And you are constantly, you're like the press secretary for Israel and the Jewish people always. You're like giving Iran policy out in work and commenting on interpersonal relationships vis-a-vis someone who wrote a book at every second. And what happens sometimes is that some Jews say, I'm going to entrench. I'm just going to entrench. I'm not like them. They're not like me. I can't connect in any way to them. And there's a sense of, it's not elitism because you don't mean it this way, but there's a sense of distance that we don't value you. You're not religious. Doesn't mean you have to hang out with them. But when you give off a sense of, I'm open. You want to ask me a question? You can ask me a question. I'm proud and I'm open and I'm smiling and I'm happy. I'm not in hiding. What happens is people come up to you, and they will come up to you, and they'll engage you. And by Niyastaiti, I find that to be the best. Because first thing it does is make sure you're clear on our religion. Sometimes you get into the robotics of life. You do it because we do it because we do it because we do it, and we just make sure God doesn't zap us. So we keep on doing it. And just go forward. And why do we put on tefillin? I don't know. Let's just hope it's no tachanim today. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever. I don't know. I'll eat this, don't eat this, do this, get drunk, don't get drunk. Whatever. We just do it because we do it, right? We're not tested by it. And what the business world does to you is it tests you. It says why. And it makes you into a person that's proud and knowledgeable. And when you're a person in the office that is open, so I'm just asking you a question out like whatever. When you can engage somebody in a conversation, when you can defend yourself, when you can give an articulate response, when you can explain why is it that you mumble to yourself every time you leave the bathroom, which that looks, by the way, looks weirder than you think. I'm telling you, that's the one thing they don't get. They're like, why are you mumbling? I'm like, just because I'm mumbling. And then after a while, they're like, every time you leave, you mumble. I'm like, I'm saying a prayer. They're like, why are you always saying prayers? I'm like, that's what Jews do. We get up, we pray, we go to bed, we pray, we eat bread, we just pray back ends, both ends on the bed. All we do is pray. Pray, think, you know, eat, complain, you know what I'm saying? And then eat some more and maybe make some money. That's basically, no, it's not. But that's just not. But there's, I'm not worried, I'm going to engage. Pride, and I mean this, pride, openness, and graciousness. There are people that I meet that feel like the non-Jews in your environment are like different human beings. When you're out in the world, there's a certain respect that everyone demands and deserves. And when you engage in people with that level of respect, if they have different opinions, they have different backgrounds, they have different religions, it doesn't matter. When you're willing and your mentality is, this is who I am and I'm never giving it up, and guess what? I'm open, I'm happy, and I'm totally respectful for you and what you do. You create this aura around yourself that is so mature that most of the time between me and you, the people that come out your age don't have. And I'll end with this because I can just do this forever, so I'll sit down. When you're out there working, there's two stages of your career. There's employee and there's principal. Employees are the guys that work. Principals are the guys that own. You're playing to own. You're playing to be a partner. You're not playing to be an employee. You may be an employee, which is totally fine, acceptable, and wonderful. But you want to have a level of your experience and expertise where you're invaluable to a company, because if you don't, in this environment, it doesn't last long. I find a lot that when you come out, they're all dragging you down. Do this, say this, act this way, lower. what this religion does for you, by the way, is it turns you into a ben adam. You're a gavra. You have control of your taiva. You're not controlled by taiva. It's a person that walks down the street. You don't have to look. There's some food on the table. You don't have to eat. What we do for a living as Jews is we practice physical control. So we have spiritual mastery. That's what we do. When you come out into the world, they drag you. No, no, no. You want to make it? You drag yourself down to be one of us. That's the level of being an employee. And what happens is the people on top, after the initial thing runs out, and the people on top go, I'm not looking for employees. I'm looking for gavras. I want someone that can control. I want something that rises above tension, that rises above problems, that has integrity, that can hold on to a value when the going gets tough. Those are the midos of greatness. And what happens to firm people many times, firm guys that don't lose it, that come out strong, is that they end up becoming these people that the rest of the employees go, I don't know, something about him. I can't describe it because they don't know what gavra means. They're like, he's got something. It's called partnership quality. And it's because you walk around able to balance everything and you don't give up. But when you have these mentalities, you take them into your specific jobs, you deal with your specific environments, and what you're doing is you're building around yourself a core of who you are. Say one more thing and I'll say that. In my company, I forget what goes on in the RXR where I was. Thank God, Hashem blessed. We had Friday learnings. I was doing these short videos on Xenation.com. Everyone gets that. CEOs, non-Jews, I don't care. You know what I'm saying? At a point in your career, you're like, whatever, this is who I am. I got this, thank God. At some point, someone said to me, you know, thank God that I had this conversation with you. I said, why? He goes, the last lawyer we had is an Orthodox Jew. And I asked him a question. This is like, I can't even say this. I asked him a question about fasting in Yom Kippur, because I'm also Jewish. And he said to me, don't even bother. Just be happy that you don't have to do the stuff that we've got to do. And he goes, so I said, thank God I was born not religious. He goes, but you're telling me like this stuff is meaningful. Like what's going on? And that's exactly what's going on. He's dying for me. You think people want money? People don't want money. They want meaning. They think money makes them meaningful, but it doesn't. People want meaning. There's a death in their family. They're dying for someone to tell them how to connect the dots. There's someone loses money, makes money. It's all about depth. And what a firm Jew does, and I mean this 1,000%, and you have to see yourself in this light. You're not just a regular person. B'chad Hashem, we were born into this. A firm Jew represents meaning. That's why they don't curse around you, unless they start and you let them. And you can't say don't, but there's a comfortability and an uncomfortability. They don't play that stuff in front of you unless you let them and you laugh and watch, because they'll always play stuff in front of you. This is initiation, by the way. You come out, depending on where you work. But when you rise above, you become the center of meaning. And you go. It may take a year, it may take 5 years. Who cares? Life is long, Mitzvah Shem. You get to a place right now where you are who you are and they respect you for it. And not only that, they look up to you for it. And when you start giving life advice and start explaining meaning stuff, you get into a position of giving. And when you're giving to your boss, you're already, you're touching his level. And that helps your business. See that? So those are my very brief initial comments. For turn it questions however you want, or I can just keep on going forever.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Harry, for joining us. When I told my wife that we speak with Mr. Harry, he said, you're in trouble. He's very funny. Let's focus for a moment on how we can prepare ourselves now. In other words, many of the questions that were posed were questions that are on the details of life later on, and it would be very important for us to hear practical strategies. But I think much more important are the things that often don't get focused on, the things that often don't get asked, because we're not used to thinking in those terms. Right, as Mr. Rari mentioned, we're often not used to thinking about exuding pride. We don't have to think about seeing ourselves as communicating a sense of strength. Right? So these are the things that I think are more important to focus on now, because those are the more important things that one can that we can prepare ourselves for now and so closely a yeshiva. The American corporate world, so there are certain cultures that you're going to have to, if you become part of it and you engage it, so you're going to have to certainly be aware of the cultures. And I think there are three areas. Probably the deepest and most pervasive area is how one measures success. That is certainly seeped into all of us. Right? In other words, Mr. Rari referred to that you measure success in making partnership. You measure success, you know, a guy walks into shul, that's become so much part of our culture. So if a guy walks into our shul, walks into not our shul, but any shul, and he's a person of great means, he's a rich person, right? He owns several companies, right? He's made it. So then people start the buzz about that person, right? That's what goes through your mind. And that's good, that's important. But for us, as the fullness of life, there's so many other measures of success. Is a person a good husband? Is he a good father? Is he a community person? Right? In our world, a person may not make partnership, but he's a great father. His children love him. He's raised a beautiful family. He's a wonderful husband. Right? He managed to be koveya itim every single night. The man is 16, he's gone through Shas, Biyun. So as a community, we have sometimes bought into one measure of success, one flat measure of success. And we have to make sure that that doesn't happen to us. We have to make sure that we have to catch ourselves. That when we see ourselves buying into the measures of success of the street, that is one measure of success. But there's more out there. There's much more out there. Much, much important than that. That's something a person has to... doesn't happen unless you focus on it and work on it. There is a... we're all familiar with the decadence that is really the hallmark of culture right now. And it's hard to move within the world without... Mr. Rari will give us some comments. I just had a day or two ago a woman called up that the loving family, and her husband is an accomplished person in his field, and she's very nervous because it was a merger. The companies merged, and the secretary that was assigned to her husband's new office is a young, vibrant, beautiful woman. And even though her husband is a tzaddik, her husband, he's very careful of himself. But she called me up, what's she supposed to do about it? She's right. She's a smart woman. She knows that we're all boss of Adam, we all the Yetzirah, and day in and day out. And people get worn down. And there's a language that very often, in order to be part of the group, so... And we have to hear what Mr. Rari has to say about this, where when this one's guard down, how does one deal with that? Where the in order to be a player in the office, you have to have a certain kind of language. Otherwise, so the people that I speak to, they don't see themselves as the rules of engagement. The third area is an area of integrity. And in the business world, there are two standards that everything has to be measured by. Number one, is it legal? And number two, the next standard is, will I be comfortable if this is public, if it goes to the newspapers? You have to make a decision. The decision is legal, number one. Number two, if it's legal, but it's not going to look in the newspapers, we obviously have a third standard. To keep that standard in mind often can be very difficult. So those are three areas, much deeper and much more ongoing and much more pervasive, that you have to figure out, that you have to be on guard, that you have to be aware of. what I think is one of the accomplishments that we can discuss this evening is that how do we prepare ourselves while we're learning in yeshiva for negotiating these different situations later on. What came to my mind is Yosef HaTzadik. He was worn down, right? According to one shita, when he came back that fateful day, so he had, according to Ibn Ezra, was a year later. So again, day in and day out, Ibn Ezra seems to say, Vayika Yom was a year. She was trying to get the better of it. And it happened, finally it happened. So Chazal say, Gemara Taita says, so what happened? How was he not Nechsha? Right? So y'all know, he had a picture of his father. So one of the things that we should be doing in yeshiva is figuring out who is going to be the Demus Yoikna. And that's not only to catch ourselves, but a Demus Yoikna against which we can measure how we conduct ourselves, against which we can measure how we speak, against which we can measure what our aspirations are, what our goals are. What was the Demus Yoikna? What did Yaakovinu say? He said to him, to the Sparsha, he says, your name is in the Chaisha. It's with all your brothers. So that's what we have to be working on. The Dmasyakta could be hopefully be a person's wife. That's a great Dmasyakta. The Dmasyakta could be a father. But if one doesn't see that that's going to happen, so a Dmasyakta should be a Rebbe. Should be a Rebbe of a Shul. Should be somebody that I can conjure up the picture and say, I make this person proud. Dmasyakta Yulu Bachalon. Some darshanim say he saw a reflection in the window because he looked like Yaakov Avinu. He saw himself. He says, "This is me." We have to create aspirations for ourselves. Aspirations that are created in the yeshiva, and those aspirations we carry with us. We expect certain things of ourselves. If we form those expectations in the yeshiva, Taharas HaKodesh, and we burn them into our minds and memories, that's a great misyarka. I envision that my name is going to appear in the Choshen. That's what he told Yosef HaTzadik. So you have to remember, number one was Yosef HaTzadik. Al tamin ba'atzmacha. A person can never go in any field. And Rabbanus too. A person should never say, it's not going to happen to me. A person has to be aware. It can happen. Anybody can get worn down. Anybody can become acculturated. Anybody can become influenced. So we have to create for ourselves certain sources of strength that will make sure that we do have this, the pride, the graciousness, that we communicate the strength and the meaning that Mr. Rari spoke about. We have to be, I believe, growth oriented. In the yeshiva it's easier, but if we're focused on the yeshiva then, and we realize this is life, person always has to expect himself to grow. When you date, you have to date a woman who is comfortable growth, who is comfortable with the idea that what I am right now is great, but I aspire to be more, and not afraid of growth. The growth doesn't mean that I'm criticizing something which I'm coming from. If a person is focused on growing, then that I think is one of the greatest antidotes from sinking and from acculturating. You have a Rebbe, you choose a Rav, you choose a community which focuses on the value of family, you choose a community which focuses on the value of Talmud Torah, where there's a Chevershaft. Come to Bergenfield. He moved to Bergenfield. We'll always be stressed. And I think, final comment, I think that if the workplace is challenges certain things that are important to us, so all the more important is that the home has to be Al Taharas HaKodesh. and all the more important that the home has to be, it's not a stira. The person has a home which functions one way and an office which functions properly, but differently. It's not a stira. It means that when I come to my house, so there's a certain atmosphere I want in the house, a certain way of speaking, a certain cover, a certain respect. You know, if a person cannot be gracious for a certain hours of the day, a person can't be respectful only at work. A person's home is informed with respect. He speaks to his wife, he speaks to his kids with respect. When he has to take a phone call, it's a bechavadik way. So then he marches forward, he carries that saying. A person develops a home that expresses pride in one's avoda. All right, so then it carries into the workplace as well. So again, so those are the things that I think that when a person looking forward, so looks forward to designing certain sources of strength, certain oases, certain areas, certain places in one's life. In the yeshiva, so we can begin to formulate what the Dumas Yerken is going to be. When you're dating, so then when you look for a woman who's going to be growth oriented and comfortable with growth, who's always going to be with you, a person can be able to discuss, has the depth to discuss these things. In yeshiva, you're figuring out how you're going to empower your Talmud Torah later on. It means you're figuring out how to become people who enjoy learning and love learning, so you'll always be able to learn. And you're figuring out which svarim speak to you, what resonates with you, so you'll always be able to enjoy it, to love it. So these are the things that you're taking care of now. And I think these are the things that should be so much part of your thinking while you've been talking closely to yeshiva.
I could not agree more with what the Rav said. A couple of thoughts, which is number one, in the workplace that I find a lot is emunah. Emunah is real. It's not, when your emunah is strong, when you're in your yeshiva, you're testing, you're learning, you're struggling, you're figuring out emunah in a real way, and not just something that we take for granted because we're in the protective environment. It affects the future. And I think that's what Rob was talking about, which is you can't survive in that world if you're not clear that he runs the world. Because then you make the wrong choices. You run after the money and not what's right. You are engaged in conversations that you shouldn't be engaged in because you think you're the one who's going to bring your parnasa. We don't bring our parnasa. That doesn't just work for Sfaradim that really buy this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, even the Ashkenazim buy this. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have this need, thanks to Adam HaRishon, to work, and we accept it and we go do it. But we don't bring parnasa. The Eivishna gives parnasa. And when we work in yeshiva, the truth is, now that Rezor was talking, there's so many times in the business world I wished I was back in yeshiva before I left. So many times, because I'd want to have spent the time without all the outside stuff building a stronger fortitude on certain concepts, like emunah, like the svarim. Like for me, there's certain svarim that I always go to. I got it afterwards, but if I was in yeshiva and creating a depth in certain svarim, it's who you are, it's how you connect to. I find it's funny because someone gave me this line when I started, so true. The three things you have to protect yourself for when you go to work with. The first is emunah. You have to have strong emunah. If you don't believe Hashem runs the world, in Befrat, it doesn't matter, we're out. Second is Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is big. Because if you're not careful, you say something, Lashon Hara always comes back. The last one, which is I think the biggest one, which is Shmiras Einayim. And here's why it's so big. Because what are we up against when you're frum? You're up against time. You have to give time doing other things. You got to run at 2 o'clock to catch the mincha down the block. You got to book out. You know what I'm saying? You know, you had to explain the back ends of Sukkot in September, which is very fun, by the way. Sure, Rosh Hashanah. We all take off Rosh Hashanah. Oh, Yom Kippur, that's cool. what? There's another one? There's a back end of the other one? There's 4 days? Don't be kidding. No, seriously? So September is ours, by the way. Right? So what do we lose? We lose time. But here's what happens. When you're involved in this shmirasei nayim relationship, all that stuff that you think you're not going to be involved in, and then the Eitara comes flying at you from the beginning and drags you in places you never thought possible, if you're not strong, you get stuck in this. But when you fortify yourself now in yeshiva, if you're working on your shmirasei nayim, if you're working on your understanding of relationships and why is it that we do what we do, and you're going after and you're involved in the right relationships, you walk into an environment, and when you are free from that drama, you'll be surprised how much time you have to focus on your job. I found myself and the guys that I know, when we are free from all this drama, all of it, we walk in, we focus, we get it done, we move out. And that allows you to make up a lot of the time that you think you would lose because you're not stuck at the sixth party that everyone's going to that they don't need to go to because it's not going to affect your career. And you're actually taking off for the entire month of September. Those are the two concepts that I just want to bolster what the rabbi was saying. It's just open to comments and questions.
So if people want to, I don't know if you want to write questions down in the car, we can pass them up, or if anyone wants to open up, we have some questions in advance, but certainly to start hashkafic, halachic, whatever it is, but this is the time.
Is your problem with respecting everyone's beliefs? When it comes to religious Jews approaching you about everything, is there a certain way that you found that you have to approach it where you're not insulting them, where you're not coming there nothing from?
This is my perspective, Lanius Daiki. I don't believe we ever make anybody from. We have the best thing in the world. We're billionaires. The fact that someone's not from is just ridiculous. Like, how do you not follow the creator of the universe? It's not their fault for most of the time. Most people just don't have the education. They didn't have the analysis. They didn't have the love. Most people that are not more connected to Yiddishkeit, and I mean from by connecting to God, they've not, it's not how you look, it's what you do that I'm defining from. Most people are not connected to frumkeit because they do not have the experience that allowed them to. I am who I am, and I am as proud as possible. I'm not trying to make you me. And I'm not going to judge who you are based on your actions. I am a resource that's going to help you if should you want it, that's going to educate and inform you. I'm going to offer you things that are completely, you know, only beneficial to you, should I decide. But because you're less religious than me, I'm not going to judge you. That's major. Because you walk around the yarmulke, everyone without thinks, you think you're more religious than me? Do me a favor. You know how many yarmulkes I know steal? Do you know that 6 years ago, on the paper, remember the paper? Do me a favor. Don't tell me you take off 18 days. Maybe you should figure out how to treat your wives. I saw the news. I saw the 60 Minutes 4 years ago, what they do in Ramat Beit Shemesh. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're like, what? I just said hello. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted to know if there was skim milk in the fridge. You know what I'm saying? Like, what happened? Right? You're dealing with that, by the way. You're walking into that time bomb. You have no idea it's coming. It's coming. The fact that her father was an Orthodox rabbi and now she's a reformer. It's coming to you, by the way. And it's coming just like, it's a freight train coming your way. Your response is, I don't judge you whatsoever. In fact, I don't know if I'd be like you if I was like you. I have no idea. My job isn't to judge. He's the judge. I don't judge anybody. I'm just happy with who I am. And if I can be beneficial to you in your ways, that's fine. Once you drop that analysis of how religious they are by what they do, and because we don't see that perspective. We don't know where they came from. So we don't know how religious they are. Because, in my opinion, I don't know how to judge people unless I've been with them since they were born. When that goes, first of all, you're free. And they're free. And they're going to throw something at you, and your response is, no, it's okay. I'm not judging whatever you do. This is just what I do. And if you want, and that, I find, is very, very digestible. That as soon as they know that I am legitimately not judging them, like I'm really just opting out from deciding how religious they are based on how religious I am, and I respect them for who they are. I'm not trying to make them firm. It's a game changer. And what happens is the more you love Yiddishkeit and it comes across in a genuine way, the more they pick up on that and will come and engage you. And you create this really mutual, this level of respect. Because if you don't, I want to show you, want to know who's going to get in your way from being from? It's not Jim McIntyre. No way. Henry Hutchinson Parkway III is fine with you taking off, because guess what? He's in church. Because what? You know who's upset with you taking off on Sukkos? Sarah Goldberg, who's in work, going, you think you're more religious than me? Guess what? I answer emails on Yom Kippur after 6 o'clock, and it's not her fault. And we can't judge her. She's a wonderful person. God bless her. I don't know if she's better than me. She could be. I don't know her parents are like. But as soon as she sees you as that person, your life is hell. You see that? That's just my thoughts.
Whatever they were.
Yeah.
You spoke about being open to hearing other people's ideas and addressing them. But it's a question for the Rav also. How open can you be to outside ideas? And isn't there a danger in that?
Start with the rabbinic source, and then we'll give the secular version, I guess. Uneducated source.
When you're, I think that you can be open to almost everything except for paganism, except for what is there. If you happen to be working with a Buddhist, you might be in trouble. Poor Buddhist, yeah, but you can be open to anything. And you have to have a certain filter as to what you're listening to, right? Let's say a person may have a certain, he may not believe in the Ron Shalom, right? So you're listening to a person who is a Tinoch Shenishma. You're listening to a person who life has put him in a situation where he doesn't see things the way you see things, right? Right. He gave me Torah. This person didn't get it. Right? You see a person, and you also don't know what terrible nisyonos the person may have had. So once you're able to look at the person, number one, as a tzemel elokim, he has things of value to tell you. He has experiences of value that, if you listen to him, you'll hear your own. And with very rare exception. Very, very rare exception. So once that's your orientation, he's a Tzelem Elokim, he has certain ideas, there's certain things that I can learn from him. Right? There's a sort of depth of respect for him. And there's certain ideas that are a set of ideas that may be extremely uncomfortable for me. But he's a Tinoch Shenishma, and I have to know how to distance myself from it. So that there are situations, for example, if it's and be worthwhile to hear how to get out of these. Let's say a person who is a very decadent person in the office, and the things he says are just become filthy. So maybe either that's the culture of the office, or maybe he is just such a whiz at what he does that he gets to, so that would be an interesting thing. How does one handle that kind of situation? Right? Because there, you just don't want to get dragged down. But let's hear how you handle that kind of situation.
When I mean openness, I don't mean you're integrating their information. You're just allowing them space to not feel that you know everything. You allow them to say, by us, we shake palm branches on Palm Sunday. It's great. As opposed to me saying, well, that's dumb. That's totally not true. And by the way, he's a Jew, so give it up. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's a lulav, for God's sakes. You're allowing them to say, that's interesting. Wow, that's wonderful. Well, that's great for you. Two things that are critical. If you think you're going to survive in this world without a Rebbe, you have another thing coming. You cannot survive in the outside world without a Rebbe. Period. End of story. You need a source that is outside this world. You got to go back to the ivory tower. You need someone who surrounds himself in Torah, who doesn't have to deal, Baruch Hashem, with the schmutz that we have to deal with, and because you need that perspective, you need that, you need that unadulterated, this is truth, that takes place in the mind of somebody that is kulo Torah. You have to find that Rebbe. I gotta tell you, my Rebbe saved me from bad deals and bad decisions all day. I go back to him, I go, what, when I'm stuck, what do you think? Talks it over, we're in business. Forget about it. I see the corporate world as a raging river and Rebbeim as the branch. So that's number one. Openness is not integration of information, it's allowing of them to give space, and honestly, it's respecting them for them. They're Tinoch Shemishpa, they come from different backgrounds. You know, I had a paralegal in my office who is Catholic woman, who is the most respected. She knew every single Jewish holiday. She was reminding the Jews that it's Purim. They're like, that's not really a holiday. She's like, it's a holiday. I'm like, what is going on here? Because to her, they're holidays, and she would come to me and say, you know what we do in our holidays? We have this, and this is how Easter works. And I wasn't like, whatever. I gave her the space to be open. I said, that's great for you, and this is how we do it, and this is why we think it. And just to give her that ability to not feel like I'm judging her. When it comes to decadence, you have to be careful, because there are people out there that are really decadent. I went through pain one time where I thought I was going to lose my job, where we had this thing where we had to go to lunch. The group needed to go to the lunch, and the lunch consisted of them sharing experiences of what they saw online the night before. And I'm sitting there like, and I became the guy that was like, whatever, like, come, you didn't see that episode of, stop, really? And it got to a point where I had to make a decision initially if I was going to even pretend that I wanted to be there, or I was going to start doing the, I don't want to be here, I'm getting out of it. And the problem was that the schmutz, it makes you dirty, and you don't even want to be around that. So there's a point of it where this is part of life. As soon as you even start to listen to it too much, I believe this is where Emunah kicks in. And you got to say, you got to have a line in your mind that you're still crossed. And I did. And I could have gotten kicked out of that group, but I just couldn't. I said, I don't care. And I said, I just can't come to lunch. Or, you know, and Chaffee, there's another guy next to me who was like a Mormon. Mormons the best, by the way. The Mormons, they're awesome. I mean, I don't know if they believe, whatever. I'm not going to argue over their belief system, but they're straight. They don't drink coffee. They don't mess. And I was with a Mormon, and the two of us, like the two faith-based, you know what I'm saying? Like, so we just can't, I'm sorry. And you know what? To his credit, he just stopped. But when it comes to decadence, you have to be careful. I don't go to the bars, period. I don't care. If I lose the client, I lose the client. I'm not going to some bar. Period. End of story. God will take care of me. I'm sorry. I'll say the right pitch to my Torah from a clock. I know Parsha Saman back. I don't say it like Arab, like Shavuos, like the rest of the people, Sivan, whatever the Ashkenazim say it. Every day, Parsha Saman. This is the deal. I'm not walking. I'm not. So openness does not, when it comes to that stuff, we're vigilant. Shmir Sinai, that's our. If you want to get into Kabbalah, you know where Parsha comes from? Yosef Atzadik, Shmir Sabris. Period. End of story. Yosef Atzadik is Parnasa. Strong in the right way, the Eibishter gives it to you. He knows what he's doing. And if he doesn't give it to you, like the rabbi said, better. Better fail being who you are than being succeeding and not being who you are. 10 times. That's a great question. That's the concept of I don't think it's openness to over, you know, well, on that subject. Yeah?
A couple of questions. First off, I'm going to be around it. What sign you said you had firm that you find so specific for you? The last question is just in general, a person who has to work long hours, how does he maintain a connection to learning? It's very hard. If a person learns every day for an hour, 2 hours, fine, that's good. If he can't do that because his job demands very demanding hours, how does he maintain a connection?
These are my thoughts with Moshe Weinberger, Ish Kodesh, Vinciva Shalom, Michtam Eliyahu, and Ruth Dessler, and Rav Chaim Freelander. Rav Chaim from Sisse Chaim, and Siva Shalom, and Michtam Eliyahu are like, I don't know, I feel like they've written like every single piece. If I'm ever in a situation where I need chizik, that's where I go. share it with the Litvishen, with Israel, you know what I'm saying? And it's a little Hasidish a little bit in there. 5:15. Nothing goes on at 5:15. Yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah. 5:15. Nothing ever goes on at 5:15. So if you're losing out at night, if you're you need to have some kfiyas. Vanias daiti. You get up to Shemayim, Kobe itim l'tayra. That's it. It doesn't matter how much you learn. I don't know. I can't say the title. I don't know if you need to learn 12 hours a day, but you got to learn one. And you got at one, if it could be at night, matov manayim. If it could be during the day, matov manayim. If you can do it on the can't, 5:15. Best hour. Then you keep that. And then you don't sleep at night. Coffee helps a lot. Yeah.
I know you mentioned lunches. I have a feeling this is one of my problems. You guys work going to non-kosher restaurants, like on both sides of the office side and the practical. And also, do you have to work, do you wear a yarmulke when you go to a non-kosher restaurant, if you ever do? And what do you allow to eat? I know some people say that you eat fruit or salad.
Let me just start with a. I went to an OU seminar once, where they went through what you can eat in a restaurant. Just throws me. I'm sure there are things you can eat in a restaurant. I'm sure the Rav knows more than I do. Salads, how it's cut, onions, the whole thing. It just I'm just scared that, like, you know, there's a guy in the back with, like, you know, cutting pork. I don't know. You're saying, like. You know, I have this story, I don't know if you've heard this before, with the guy Rick and the Wasp. When he left, my colleague, I said to him, I was Orthodox. He's like, yeah, I know. He's like, no pork, Diet Coke. I'm like, that's an expression? Like, I'm a Diet Coke guy. That's it. I'm a Diet Coke guy. And if you're, that's just who I am. It's just easier. Yeah. Because as soon as you get into eating, in my opinion, unless, like, you're starving, and, like, you just came out from a desert, and you're in Utah, and you don't live, then I guess we got to get into halachas. But, you know, even now, it's like anywhere you go, there's OU stuff on everything. Like, I was driving back from Baltimore 2 nights ago, and I remember I stopped at a rest stop, and, like, there was one thing that wasn't OU. I was, like, upset. You ever get that feeling? You're like, if it's not pork rinds, it should be OU. You know what I'm saying? Like, how is there pretzels that are not kosher today? Like, we're so spoiled. I find that way with, if I'm going on a lunch, I always have nosh in my drawer. And then, depending on if I'm healthy or not, it goes from almonds to pretzels. There's another conversation. But I'm always stashing food for this reason. Because if we're going out to eat, I'm a Diet Coke guy. And even when I get crazy with the fruit, even. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm an orange, not an apple guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I find that when you'll survive, you'll get through it. And you know what I find, by the way? One time I went to a restaurant, honestly, and I ordered the food, and I played with it the whole time. Like, I had no choice. We had a dinner. We closed the deal. And they served everyone non-kosher food. So I just, like, you know, you do the move around trick. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're mashing it. You're like, yeah, I really buy it. And you move it over. You're like, oh, I can't believe it. And you move it over. You're like, yeah, can you take this back? And I'm saying, oh, I'm going to have the salad. And it was so much time and attention given to moving around some non-kosher food. And there's always one guy that's like, I noticed that you didn't eat. You know what I'm saying? Like, do you, like, not eat pork or something? You know what I'm saying? I don't know the halachas as much as I should. To me, you walk into a non-kosher restaurant, Diet Coke. Or Coke, if you really want to be dangerous.
Does it ever get to a point where people are, like, annoyed you're not eating when
they're, like, never. Clients sticking up their lunch? Never. They feel bad. I lived for 3 years in Baltimore. I commuted every week for 2 days in the Inner Harbor. I didn't know this at the time when I agreed that downtown Baltimore is not like downtown New York. You know what I'm saying? Like, downtown New York is like just Jewville until, like, you know, 8 o'clock at night and on weekends. Downtown Baltimore is not. So I spent 2-3 years there. And we went to restaurants every other week because we had... Never. Never. This is who I am. And I'm not... This is just who I am. And I'm so happy. And they're like... They're waiting for you to be, like, upset about it. How could you not... And by the way, when you go to a non-kosher restaurant, everyone looks amazing. You know what I'm saying? Like, for some reason, it's like the way... And to the level in which I would just, like, Diet Coke, bathroom, Diet Coke. I could just like, I never in my life, after I got past the, don't feel bad for me, I'm happy. And they're like, how could you be happy? This is so delicious. The answer is, I believe in this. And I believe in this. It's like almost like a diet. You wouldn't eat if you want. This is what I. Once you get past that and you feel great, as soon as you don't feel bad drinking Diet Coke, they don't feel bad driving. They'll have your portion. They'll be like, we'll order one for him. I'll take your hamburger, okay? No problem. But no one feels bad for you. It's that it's a question of how uncomfortable you're going to make them feel. And if you make them feel uncomfortable, by the way, they're not taking you back. Doesn't want to make them happy? Make a part of it? Maybe I'll switch it up with a Sprite every once in a while? But that's my perspective. I'll put it forward.
Halachically, if the going into a non-kosher restaurant raises the question of Maariv Zayin, I think that a person goes in dressed for a business meeting, so takes away the Maariv Zayin issue. Right? If a guy walking by would see that clearly these people are talking business, then that's what we call Shevcha Mechia Chalom. So then it's clear, it's so common now that people have business dinner meetings. So I think from that perspective, we mutter. I think precisely, you know, what one cannot eat. So that, again, I think that's better left for a later time when it's really Lamasa. And it depends so much on the details of how large the restaurant is and would they have a separate food cutting area. That's I think one of the more stickier issues is when they order kosher for you,
yeah,
and it comes from a place with a ben hashgacha.
That's the worst. When they open in the back. So like, here, it's kosher. You're like, where did it come from? The kitchen. You're like, oh, I think this is the kosher one, right? You're like, but we got it from you from Luigi Siegel's or something. Yeah, that's, yeah.
Okay, so just have your in advance, have your explanations ready of how you're going to work it out. What you're going to say, a person is sincere and he's trying to be respectful and express himself. So you know what you want to say, because Baruch will make it come out okay.
Another bit of advice: never go for the prepared kosher meals when you go out to a restaurant, ever, because they bring it out sometimes and they open it in front of you. There is nothing worse than it being in a fancy restaurant and half silver foil that can cover the state of Arizona comes out, and they're like, hold on one second, kosher meal, anybody? Hold on. And everyone's like, what's going on? Are you building the atomic bomb? And you're like, yeah, I'm sorry. Hold on, it's for which, anyone? Oh, the yarmulke, oh, bring it to the yarmulke here. No. Never, ever, trust me, it's not worth the reheated rubber chicken that you're going to get. Diet Coke. If it's this class is giving you nothing, this is a piece of advice you can take with you. I may have asked from China. Should we order from you from Abigail's? No, thank you. I'll order an extra Diet Coke. You'll thank me one day. Look me up online afterwards and email me.
What about having a role model to look at? Like, someone's done what you've done in order to figure it out.
I think that's absolutely critical. You know, Napoleon Hill wrote a book called Think and Grow Rich. In that book, he writes that you have to build yourself your own. He calls it something different. It's called a board. Advice in life is that you need to build a board. You're the CEO of your life, and just like a company, you're no gabadavar, which means you can't always make the right decisions. You need a board. The rabbi, the rav, your rebbe, is the chairman of that board. And many times in life, you will find people that have achieved something in the area that you want to achieve and maintained the lifestyle doing it. I have three or four lawyers, you know, one who I'm talking to about right now, who are, when I was in law firms, who I went to regularly for questions, for advice, from guys who I respected. I spent Shabbos by their house. I vetted. When I got to them, I held on to them. They like said hello, and like I grabbed onto their ankles, and I called and I emailed, because this is what I wanted. I was in a law firm, and I wanted to grow in that field. And there were three or four guys that had managed to achieve a certain level of success in the Fruchtins and Gashmis, and I wanted to know how. You're absolutely right. You need a role model in that world as well. Yeah, that's critical. The more role models, you know, the more you have guidance.
Is
there a hetter to shake a woman's hand if she
feels it? The answer is yes. If a woman is first of all, nowadays shaking hands is good. And the culture is very often look around beginning with shaking hands, you're
getting up easy.
Right. If a woman stretches her hand out, then that's I think you should accept it. I shouldn't. I don't think it's usur. The negiyah shein shalchim b'nishik. Something is cordial. So we have at best a minog, not even have physical contact with it, which is totally cordial and totally meaningless in terms of anything that's romantic. So it's a minog, but. And I'm not even sure if the minhag is so well recorded, but we have such a minhag perhaps. So when you're in a situation where a woman stretches out a hand, she's just being cordial. She's being very generous to you, because the other guy she's going to give a hug and a peck, and so to let her sort of hang there is really disrespectful. So I think that's the appropriate thing to do. I think that if it's a as if it's in one's own office, so then at some point you'll set up some kind of understanding as to the distance that you keep. But an initial meeting, initial interview, I think that's acceptable.
So it's better not to extend to initiate a handshake.
I would think it's better not to. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Been something stressed to me by coworkers and supervisors that it's very integral in your career to build up relationships with everyone in the company. Do you have any suggestions or advice between having a relationship that's constructive to your professional growth and where to draw the line between professional relationships and friendships?
I don't think there are real friendships out there that don't ultimately grow organically. The development of friendships are given too much weight. Early on, when people were going partying every night and saying this is how you become successful, it's an excuse because they want to go partying. The real relationships that make it in professionally are professional relationships. What people want is they want people that are competent and that are good to be around. If you're good at your job and you're engaging and you're a good person, that is enough to take you to where you need to go professionally. If you're like, usually friendships end up even throwing it off because you get into like drama about life. Like you don't want to know about their mother-in-law. You know what I'm saying? Like you don't want to know about that. It's a space that is volatile. I'm thinking back now at the friends that I have. And most of the time, or friends that people have, most of the time, when you are with somebody for a long time, it develops into a friendship. And that friendship really is like, let's go out to dinner once every 6 months. It's very rarely, or like the occasional I'll invite you to the bar mitzvah. But it only happens really with your closest colleagues, who if you're vigilant, you will vet over time. It doesn't happen. It doesn't have to happen with just random people that will ultimately be valuable relationships in the future. Because generally, that's not how it works. People want people that are good. And if you're good at your job, if you're good to be around, if you're a nice person, that gets you 85% there. And then, as you grow up, if you have a boss who you work with for 5-10 years, over time, you have a mutual relationship and maybe even a friendship. But even that's like Hanukkah gifts and like, you know, big events. But I've found today, especially today, with how busy everybody is and how everyone's sort of buzzing away to death, that there is lack of a need for relationships that are not professional to give you a chance, everything's from Hashem, but to give you at least the Bederach HaTeva chance to use networking as a way to succeed.
An important element that people have mentioned to me, and of particular importance for guys coming from yeshiva, is the work ethic. and as soon as you get into it, I've had situations where people have told me that some of the young fellows coming from yeshiva don't exemplify work ethic. So in America, work ethic is gold. We have a learning ethic, right? And we have an ethic that we have work ethic as well, but I'm saying that our minds right now are in a learning ethic. Our minds right now are, what can I do in order to be able to learn more? How can I organize my life to be able to learn more? How can I organize? And the truth is, that Rashi says in Brachos as well, a person should be organizing his work schedule in order to be able to maximize learning. And that's great. That sometimes translates into, how can I cut certain corners? Right. So if it's a college course and you cut certain corners and you still get the A, alright, you're okay, you came out ahead. In the workplace you can't do that, because there are people who are looking, and if they see, certainly they see a young guy cutting corners, it's very distasteful, and it's a source of ill reputation right away. In your mind, I got the work done, right? In your mind, I got the deal done. In their minds, you cut corners, right? In your minds, what does it matter if I didn't make the presentation perfectly? I got the deal. I feel the deal. But en route, you've created a certain image of the guy cuts corners, right? Extremely important when you're going to be asking to leave early in Shabbat. You'll be leaving early on Friday. Right? Extremely important that they don't see, well, this guy's always sort of, you know, patching things up. So that is when you're young, it's extremely important. And when you're from, it's extremely important, because if you're going to be able to communicate strengths, the first thing you have to communicate is integrity, and the first thing you have to communicate is, I'm taking this job seriously. It's not my business, somebody else's business, somebody else's clients. I'm taking it seriously. Right? I would, as an aside, the Yamaha discussion. There are many points in time when you can have that discussion. Al pi din, you don't have to have a discussion. Al pi din, you don't have to wear a yarmulke when you're working. But Moshe is a true. A person feels that they're not going to get the job. Like, they don't have to wear the yarmulke at work. Al pi din. America's changed now, where it's much easier to wear a yarmulke. Sometimes the yarmulke already announces for you, and you don't have to do so much talking down the road. So sometimes it could be a value. There's often a discussion. When do you have a discussion? Interview, when you get the job. So every situation is different, but just to give an example, it's very conceivable to me that a person could interview that a yarmulke, and then on the second or third interview he could say, no, it's important to me. But it's one of those things which are negotiable. It's one of those things which I don't have to do. A person could communicate, I would like to wear a yarmulke in the office, but you know, if you send me out to a client and you feel uncomfortable with me going as a yarmulke, if you feel uncomfortable with me going to court with a yarmulke, I don't have to wear the yarmulke. So these are all conversations which, in my mind, one can have. I appreciate Mr. Ari would see from the perspective of being in business. But coming back to the point that we're making of you, the work ethic is extremely important. Not to come off as cutting corners. And what is also mentioned to me is that you can make a tremendous reputation for yourselves, is if when it comes to Memorial Day, it comes to December 25th, comes to January 1st, President's Day, if you say, I'm here 5, 6, 7, you know, I'll man the office, right? Chancellor will say to you, well, I'm noon tonight, I have to go, right? But if you're forthcoming and you're saying, you know, I understand that when you leave on Friday, as nice as they are, if they're in the office, they're working, you're not working. Right. And you make it up Motzei Shabbos. They don't see you Motzei Shabbos. On Friday, when your desk was empty, they saw that. So you come back and you say, you know what, 7:25, you know, I'm an American, but I can be late tonight. I can say that. You can go to the party 2 o'clock if you want. So that's a tremendous form of graciousness, which will be appreciated. You establish a sense of integrity, a concern for other people, and they see that you're an honest player.
Took the words out of my mouth, literally. That I find the two biggest things you have to realize. Rabbi is absolutely right. You work non-Jewish holidays, period, unless they tell you not to. That's what we do. They're not our holidays. We don't celebrate Christmas. So if the office is off, I have every single job that I'm in, pretty much, especially in the beginning, every single secular holiday, I sent an email to the group saying, hey guys, I'm in the office today, I'm available all day, if you need anything, don't hesitate, I got it, I got your back. You cannot believe with five holidays, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever else they're doing, that's all they have, I think. I don't know. Whatever. July 4th. You know what I'm saying? Like the every single secular holiday that you can, you make it clear. I'm here. I'm covering. You got it. And it goes a long way. You know what it says? It says I have my holidays, and I have my holidays. I take my holidays very seriously, but I'm not taking everyone's holidays seriously. I'm not doubling up. Number two, be very careful when you leave on Fridays. This is extremely sensitive. If you leave on Friday, and I was joking before about 12 o'clock, if you leave on Friday at 12, and it's, unless you go into the country, which is a different story, but it's July, they know. This is, you don't have, it doesn't take 8 hours to get home. You have to be very mindful with, you don't chance it, but you be very mindful to know that you're respectful that you're leaving, but you're leaving benachas, and and when you do these things, it's very important, that work ethic is critical, that you're sensitive to you leaving. I had one person that worked in the office that was, I don't know what in the world she was thinking. Like, she announced, leaving now, bye everybody, have a wonderful weekend, Shabbat Shalom to everybody, booking out 2 o'clock. Everyone's like, are you out of your mind? First of all, it's summer. Second of all, like, can you rub it in? I'm like, shh, quiet. You know, it's like when your dad dobbins mincha and Great Adventure outside. It's like, dad! You know what I'm saying? Like, your yarmulke on. They're not Jews here. Just do it in the car or do it in the bathroom or something. You know what I'm saying? When you're little, you're like, don't show that you're a Jew. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, can you not scream that you're leaving on Shabbos 6 hours before candlelighting? Be sensitive. Because that work ethic that the rumors are is so critical, it overwhelms the relationship big time. And it's something that if you're sensitive to, people respect, and they know that you're being respectful.
While we're on that topic, would you advise, I guess, in a year where you have a lot of people falling out during the weekday, would you advise against taking vacation even if you have those vacation days?
It depends. Right? If you have the way it works in most, depending on the size of your company, smaller companies sometimes look at as religious days as vacation days. Larger companies look at them as personal days. Right? So you don't want to lose out. And let's be real. We're still Jews, by the way, right? I'm saying, like, we have to sort of got to make sure we get the system down. You get personal days, you get vacation days and religious holidays. If you take your vacation on Yontif, then you don't have that. The pro is that it's your vacation, the nachas. The con is that you lose your vacation. So you have to assess yourself. You have to assess your environment. Some of these bigger shops, they don't care. They're covering you. You take days off, it's personal, it's fine. If you're in a smaller shop, that's exactly what you do. You say, listen, I'm not taking off last week in August. I never take off last 2 weeks in August, ever. Or the last 2 weeks in January. My kids are not big enough yet. I'm in the office last 2 weeks in January. I'm every President's Week, which just came up, I'm in the office. Last week in December, I'm in the office. Always. First is the best time to be in the office because nothing goes on. So you actually can, you know, do whatever. And the last 2 weeks in August, I'm always in the office during vacation. For that reason, because I'm taking off in September. So I'll take off. You remember, the work ethic is critical. You can't. As soon as you show them that you're double dipping, they get upset. So if they let that happen, it's fine. But if they don't, sometimes it's better to say, listen, I always take off Pesach. Always. Vacation for me is Passover. And I tell them, I said, this is, I'm off for 10 days. They're like, okay, it's cool. Sukkot is a lot harder. Because Sukkot, I mean, that September is the month. That's the granddaddy of months. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's it. Because it's like a constant stream. So you can't take off, then take off, then take off. So, yeah, but I do. Now, but I'm at a different point in my career. My problem is it's Sukkah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just can't start. You know what I'm saying? You're working in the city, and where do you... So I end up now in my career. If you can pull it off in the beginning of your career, it's worth it. just get in your mind that your vacation time, this is, I think, how the Avishter, you know, we last two, it's in August. I don't think it was in the calendar back in Yerushalayim back in the old days. You know what I'm saying? Like, they took off for Gollum. I mean, that was how it worked. There's vacation days built into the system for us. What I do now is I take vacation Sukkot, I take vacation Pesach, and Gnik. That's my vacation time. And if you can get that into the system early, life is easier. Highly recommend.
I'd like to thank both of our speakers. I just laid out. We really appreciate all the wisdom and comments. If people need to go on the mire, is there a minute that wants to say there? Show of hands. That's a lot.